When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg, and this is The Deciding Decade. As a new president prepares to take office and the country continues to reel from the effects of the pandemic, income inequality and workers' rights remain a central issue in our country. Americans are clearly seeking a better deal for workers. Polls and referendum results show strong support for measures like a higher minimum wage. Yet, traditional organized labor has seen its membership shrink, and even union members don't always vote for pro-labor political candidates. I think it's a vital time to assess the future of labor for the decade ahead and to recognize the extraordinary organizing work going on the ground. I'm very much looking forward to this conversation with two of the most active and dynamic figures in the labor movement today, Mary Kay Henry and Representative Rasheen Aldridge. For a decade now, Mary Kay Henry has been the president of SEIU, Service Employees International Union, an organization made up of 2 million members across key industries. Under her leadership, SEIU has broken new ground, helping to organize workers in new ways and reaching out to kinds of workers who have lacked representation in the past. This is just part of why she was recently named one of Time's most influential people, and we are grateful to have her today. We also have Representative Rasheen Aldridge, recently reelected as a state representative in Missouri's 78th district. In 2016, he was elected as committeeman of St. Louis's 5th Ward at age 22, becoming the youngest elected city official in the city's history. A leading activist in the Fight for 15 and Black Lives Matter movements, he has chaired organizations including Young Activists United St. Louis and Missouri Jobs with Justice, and serves on the Ferguson Commission created after the killing of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014. He is a walking example of next generation leadership on issues that will impact all of us in the decade and era to come. Welcome, Rasheen and Mary Kay. Thanks so much for taking time to speak with us.
Good to be with you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So it's an exciting time. I think we should just begin by asking, where were you when you got the news that our president-elect had been officially called? And what was the first thing that went through your mind?
I was getting my marching boots on and was headed downtown San Francisco to a rally to protect the results and count every ballot. And so I threw open my window and started shouting and banging pots along with all of my neighbors. And then I went down to Harry Bridges Plaza and danced with a lot of home care workers and nursing home workers and fast food Fight for 15 leaders to celebrate. A huge step forward for our country.
How nice to be taken to their streets rejoicing and not just in anguish. Yes. Rasheen, how about you?
I mean, I think like most people, I was glued to the television for the last couple of days, just was trying to figure out what happened. So when the, it came down that President-elect Joe Biden was going to be the next president, I was right in front of TV. I seen it happen. We all yelled. I live in a like nice little compound. I call it my friend's 2.0 house. And then after that, I took to Facebook and I asked a couple people, how about we take to our streets just outside our own community, block it off and have a block party, which we did. It was just a moment to celebrate and take this moment in victory to celebrate and know that the work is continuing. But you got to take those little small moments to say, look, we did it together.
Mm. One of the things I kept thinking about was the fact that there is such sweeping support for things like a $15 minimum wage and a right to representation. And yet, all too often, we still see political figures who are really against that kind of growth still succeeding. Florida was very striking. A victory for the movement. I think something like 60% voting for that referendum for the $15 minimum wage. And yet, that was also a state that went red on the electoral map. I wonder, Representative, you're in a red state, although, as I like to say here in Indiana, no such thing as a permanently red state. How do you think these issues play out? And how do we kind of square the circle between the widespread public support for things like higher wages and the ability of anti-labor politicians to prevail even in states that want to see these things change?
Yeah. Back in 2013, this was a message of the Fight for 15, $15 an hour in a union that at first a lot of folks was unaware of. But I think as it continued to echo from New York City to Chicago to St. Louis to Indiana to South Carolina and so many other states, we started to understand that this message of a higher wage isn't anything honestly radical at all. You're talking about providing people the ability to live and work one job, be able to provide for their family, be able to provide for their future, and be able to have a union, a group that's going to be able to protect you in this workplace. And what we've seen over these last couple of years is while many elected officials haven't quickly got on board, they have been getting on board, the message of a livable wage and the opportunity to thrive is only growing. And you're seeing it now grow from workers that are organizing in it, moving from in the workplace to move into running for office. I'm not the only worker that's actually elected. It's a couple of fast food workers in South Carolina, California, and also Illinois that recently just got elected this past election. And that energy is only growing. The message of justice and freedom for all is, I think, a message that even politicians can't stop.
Mary Kay Henry, how does that track with what you're seeing in the national conversations that we're having? And can we build on the support that's been expressed on these referendum matters to make sure that we're also pressuring both parties to do the right thing, but also electing leaders who have made it a key part of their platform that they're going to raise wages and make workers better off?
I think the Florida vote gives us huge momentum at the national level to make $15 a minimum wage for everybody in this nation and to connect that to why workers have to have the right to join a union. And that's why we're so excited about Biden's caregiving economy plan as part of his Build Back Better, because Black and brown voters showed up in record numbers to deliver a record-setting vote for Biden-Harris, and they could reinvest in those same voters by making jobs that Black and brown women have done for over a century that's been excluded from minimum wage, excluded from the right to join a union. We could make that possible with bold federal action. I agree with you, Pete, that there's huge momentum for people to understand that racial and economic inequality hold the nation back from everybody being able to thrive in the way that Representative Aldridge just taught us. And being able to act on that as a first order of business, I think, is going to be critical for voters understanding that government can work to make a material change in their lives immediately.
You described the multiracial character of this coalition, which is so important. How have you and SEIU been intentional about the interaction of racial and economic justice? And what might that teach us about what has to happen next in terms of governing, as well as the future of our politics?
Well, we back movement leaders like Rasheen Aldridge, who started out as a fast food worker, and he can tell the story. It's a great one, and is now representing his district in the Missouri State Legislature, which is an example to me of how we are trying to back Black and Brown service and care workers who've been structured out of the economy because of racism and because of corporate power. And we're not going to let those two things keep us from making sure that the 64 million people that earn less than $15 get a path to 15 and the right to join a union. So those $15 an hour jobs can become good union jobs that are the foundation of the most racially diverse middle class this nation's ever seen.
You know, that point about how these jobs become good jobs, I think, is a really powerful one, too, because I live in South Bend, a city that really grew up around manufacturing. And like many communities, you know, is so fiercely protective of manufacturing jobs because they are good jobs in terms of the pay, the benefits. One thing I think we often forget is they didn't used to be good jobs. You know, these were considered some of the most dangerous, underpaid, undesirable jobs in America 100 years ago. And organized labor saw to it. These were not just any jobs, but jobs that could become the backbone of middle class. And as we see now, things like the service sector growing, and think also about the racial diversity of the workers who hold those jobs. If every service job had the same kind of aura of completeness around it that so many manufacturing jobs have had, it's amazing to think what that could fuel. I also love your pointing out that Representative Aldridge's story is a great example of the success of this movement. So let's turn to your representative to share that story from a fast food worker to office in the state capital of Missouri. Tell us about that journey and how your experience of empowerment might be something that others can learn from.
Absolutely. Pete, when I say the Fight for 15 movement, I don't just say it to say it. If it really wasn't for the Fight for 15 campaign and the way that this union has been able to empower individuals like me, I don't come from a union background. I grew up in a neighborhood, very high poverty. The median income in my zip code was 15,000. You know, I didn't know anything about organizing. And one day I was at Jimmy John's and someone came in. They started questioning me and asking me about, you know, how much the sandwich was on the menu and how much that sandwich was actually more than I was making as an employee that had been there for 2 years, and asked me questions of, you know, what do I spend my money on? Because I think what people don't understand, a lot of individuals in these fast food industries aren't young people like myself. And even when they are young and the times we're in now, we're not going to spend these funds out at the mall. You know, we're helping our mom. We're helping our family make sure we got essential stuff like toilet paper, milk, eggs. And a lot of folks in these low wage jobs are women who have families of two and three. So this movement, for me, I was very timid and shy until I met a couple organizers, and they really empowered workers like myself to know that, you know, when we come together collectively, even though a manager made me hold a sign that said I made three wrong sandwiches and took a picture, a couple months later, you know, me and my coworkers came together collectively, went out on strike along with many other workers in the city of St. Louis. That manager the next day was actually gone. But that showed to somebody like me who never, say, knew what a union was or organizing was, that when we come together collectively, that we really can make a change. And we've seen it here in the state of Missouri. Even when they fought back against us, we pushed back and we still had a minimum wage increase in St. Louis. And that was due to the skills and the opportunity that the union, and I think that's what is so important to make sure that we, you know, don't miss that union element. You know, the wages is important, but if we can't miss the importance of having a group of individuals, which are the workers, which are me and my coworkers, come together collectively saying, we love our jobs, but it can be better. Even though we don't have a union with the Fight for 15, we act as if we are a union because we know it's coming soon. And that is something that would never erase my mind as I continue to go older and older in my career of how strong it is to have a union. And when we come together collectively, we can move mountains. We've seen it when back in 2016, when Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton, and Senator Bernie Sanders said $15 an hour. It was like, what? You know? And now we have President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris saying that in the first 100 days, they want to raise the wages and give people a union. That is what it's about.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
So I'm sure you've heard some people talking about politics in the Democratic Party saying, you know, racial justice is important, but we really need to focus on kitchen table issues. You are a leader in the labor movement. You are a leader in the movement for Black lives. This is clearly not a contradiction for you. What do you say to people who seem to think that we have to choose either or?
We can't say Black lives matter without forgetting that a lot of those Black lives and workers work in these low-wage facilities. We can't talk about racial injustice without economic injustice because they go hand in hand. In most communities of color, majority of jobs you see are McDonald's, mm-hmm. Wendy's, but you can't have one conversation without the other. It is important that our party, as a Democratic member, you know, take the time, and even with SEIU, take the time to have tough conversations and be able to let those leaders stand up and speak out and figure out how do we all move forward together. Because you can't talk about climate change without talking about racial injustice.
Right.
You can't talk about healthcare injustice without talking about racial injustice. We look at this pandemic, you know, most individuals that have been affected due to the corona haven't been getting services to those communities have been communities of color. Mm-hmm. So conversation of race should be driven in all the different conversations we have, because that is a tough conversation to have. But once we get past that hurdle and understand, you know, what these communities are saying, that's been decades, nothing has really changed from the civil rights era, Martin Luther King time, to the a Ferguson movement that we've seen a couple years ago, but we have to continue to have both those conversations, because when you, Stacey Abrams, shout out to Stacey Abrams, mm-hmm. it is Black women that is leading the charge, even in our own party. So yeah. we cannot neglect the fact that this is an issue, but we have to move forward together on it.
Absolutely. Mary Kay, I want to pick up on one thing the representative mentioned that I think is really interesting and important. The goal is to make sure everyone has access to a union, but you're not waiting for people to be in a union to be organizing and empowering them. So can you talk a little bit about what I think are often called the not yet organized at your events, and how you've found ways to serve people who aren't in a position to officially be represented and yet can be empowered through that, and how that strategically is going to continue to be important in the future?
Yeah, Rasheen gave his example, and think of like thousands of Rasheens who understand through the example that he described about, at first he doesn't know what a union is. His manager is incredibly disrespectful to him and some coworkers. That ignites his desire to make a change. He takes action through his coworkers and strikes, which is an act of a union. You know, then there's a change based on the collective action. And it's thanks to the courageous leadership of people like Rasheen in the Fight for 15 that has brought hope to home care workers, to nursing home workers, to airport workers, to Amazon workers, believing that, hey, if we act together, we can make a change. What we need now is to get our government to stand with the fearlessness and courage of these workers and unrig the rules that exclude people from the right to join a union. There's 46% of the American workforce has no legal right to join a union. And that's what the government has the power to change. In addition to McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King not waiting for legislative change, but deciding to set a national bargaining table for 4 million fast food workers and making those jobs the foundation of the next middle class, just like auto jobs did for steel and rubber and all the other parts of the manufacturing sector in the last century. We need to make that happen now for the service sector.
That's so powerful. And of course, that 46% disproportionately likely to be Black and brown and women, right? Because of the way that labor law, often intentionally as part of the political compromises of almost a century ago, excluded Black and brown workers and women from some of those protections that we think of as why the New Deal was so effective and empowering. Well, take us into the kind of short to medium term future on what it's going to mean to deliver these rules, especially if we're facing divided government. You know, we're going to be working very hard, at least I know everybody in my party will be, to take the Senate and have a more labor-friendly Senate majority. But we don't know if that's going to happen. So the things you're talking about, how much of that can be achieved through things like rulemaking, through executive action or administrative work? And how much of this is fundamentally a question about legislation?
I think there's lots we can do on rulemaking, but I have to say, Pete, our expectation is we're going to win the Georgia runoff, both seats, and we need to exercise the will of the majority, even if it's by one vote in the Senate. Let's make bold, transformative change, because people showed up in record numbers. Black and brown voters, save this democracy, save this economy, and we need to invest in them and their communities and their jobs on a scale that is equivalent to the depth of the crisis that people are experiencing based on the pandemic. Too many Black and brown families are grieving too many losses because of the inaction of the federal government. Too many Black and brown families have most of their extended family out of work because this is a recession and depression that has hit the service sector. And God knows too many Black and brown families have suffered the trauma of violence in their communities, and that needs to end. We need to make those communities as safe as white communities in this country. And the climate crisis impacts us all. And so we really don't want to lower expectations to only changing the rules based on executive action. Yeah. That, of course, is part of our arsenal. But we have the expectation that even with a one-vote majority, the will of the people here is overwhelming, that we wanted a sea change. And we expect that as $15 and a right to join a union for millions more workers.
I wonder, Representative, as you're navigating those halls of power where you've earned a place, how are you being received? And how do you think being young has shaped, you know, good or bad or indifferent? How do you think it's shaped your ability to make change?
A lot of people tell me I'm a little wiser beyond my time, but I still like to be 26 and, you know, don't rush it. You know, one thing about it is, regardless of being elected official, I think what you're seeing in a lot of people, like I mentioned, some fast food workers and low wage workers that recently were just elected into office this past election day, is those individuals aren't looking to get elected for a title. At the same time as I'm a politician, I'm still an activist that would be out in the streets with individuals when it's needed the most. And as I navigate, especially in a state like Missouri, that's difficult at times. We're relying a lot on the local level to do a lot of the pushing up on these policies and progressive agenda that moves us forward. You know, I'm here to really be able to help push those conversations, even though there's folks on the opposite end, shouldn't be a us versus them. So this is a moment for all of us. And that's how I look at it. Even though I'm a Democrat, I call myself more of an issuecrat, because it's the issues that even I learned with the Fight for 15, when elected officials were saying no, the issues that was driving people to be excited was what got folks out and organized and got people ready to do whatever it took to get these policies done. So I kind of look at it in two phases, you know, educating and building relationships across the aisle, and really relying on our local levels that are doing phenomenal job in our municipalities, pushing policy that ultimately go up to the state level.
It's a great point. I think we have often underestimated local government, local politics, and especially local media as a way to make sure that we make progress. Mary Kay, how do you view the kind of stacking of these different areas where we can apply pressure or get results? The local, where you know, you can have immediate impact, and where often the party politics fall away a little bit. The state, where Representative Aldridge and so many like him are, where so much power rests in our system. And then the federal level, of course, that is a different landscape with a different president, but is not the entire ballgame. How do you think about, even just as a leader individually, how to organize your attention as well as the organization and the movement that you lead?
Well, I think the best lesson on what you've asked is the 15 movement. You know, we made a breakthrough when the voters of a 54,000 person city in SeaTac, Washington, authorized the $15 minimum wage against national opposition. I think the campaign that was run against that was like $8 million. The chamber got in, the Manufacturers Association, and the voters said yes. And we registered, I think, 1,000 new Etrian part of that community in order to take that initiative over the top. They then marched to Seattle, and then the Seattle mayor's race was contested over how are we dealing with inequality in Seattle. And the $15 minimum wage became a way for the candidates to differentiate themselves. And then they passed the first minimum wage citywide in a major city. And then it spread across the country so that now 29 million people are on the path to $15. We just added 3 million more in Florida, and the House of Representatives passed it in 18. So I think of the stack as exactly what Representative Aldridge just taught us, that the innovation often comes from cities like yours, Mayor, in South Bend, and then gets catalyzed out and then pushed up, especially on ideas that people dismiss. You know, like 15 was laughed at in 2012 when it was demanded, and it's now a mainstream debate where more and more people are crossing over and understanding we have to intervene on the worst racial and economic inequality of our generation. And this is a key lever that will disproportionately lift up Black and Brown families. Because too many Black and Brown families have been structured into minimum wage jobs because of housing and education and all these other systems.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time.
The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news, with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts, as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful Beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
SEIU, certainly in the decade that you've been leading and for some time, has a wonderful reputation as one of the most innovative labor organizations in the country. Can you talk about how you build that atmosphere of innovation? And also, you know, given some of the stereotypes that a previous generation might have had about organized labor, what lessons does your organizing success maybe carry for shaping how labor is perceived and how your fellow organizations and counterparts might approach the decade ahead?
You know, I've been blessed in this work to walk beside nursing home workers in 1980 when I first started organizing, who taught me that every day of their lives are an innovation. They have to be so creative in order to rob Peter to pay Paul and make ends meet and raise children in this economy, that I think part of the innovation in our union is fueled by the workers that make up our union. They are living in terrible economic and racial circumstances that require collective action in every aspect of their lives. And so, you know, we are born of immigrant workers in Chicago who were told they were nothing more than servants. And they stayed at it for 10 years in order to finally win a charter from the AFL and get the building owners to recognize them as workers and to actually be paid wages. And so it's hardwired into the DNA of our union to understand that we have to raise wages for workers that have been locked out of the economy. We cannot stand with the movement for Black lives and not fight for living wages for Black and brown people that will make a difference for all workers. And our union's job is to talk to workers, white, Black, brown, Asian, about why we have to link those fights, because we won't win better jobs and more unions for working people unless we uproot systemic racism. And that is not a natural idea to all working people.
Yeah.
But when we are in relationship with each other, as Rasheen said, in movements, and we learn about each other's lives, it becomes a totally natural fight.
Rasheen, how much of this do you think is a generational question? Do you think that folks your age and younger view the relationships between racial and economic issues differently than a previous generation? Or do you think it's really just one continuum and each generation's kind of standing on the work of the one that came before?
I would say I think it's more of a continuation. You know, we are standing on great shoulders of individuals just in the city of St. Louis to highlight Percy Green, who climbed the arch, or Mama Jamala Rogers. And Percy was actually one of the first activists that came and talked to us as fast food workers back in 2013 in a church basement as we was about to, you know, get ready to go out on strike. It is those, you know, mentors that are only given knowledge to the younger generation. I think as each generation come along, you know, there's different ways that those generations express themselves. And I've been told as a young person, oh, sometimes you guys just need to slow down and, you know, listen and let it play out. And I'm sure my elders were told that when they were younger too. Hmm. But it's a continuation of the message hasn't changed. I think we just figure out how to continue to change the strategy, because every time we make two or three steps forward, opposition likes to push you back. And you got to get creative. You got to do things differently, like the Fight for 15 movement, you know, taking the risk to bring in folks that, you know, technically aren't member paying dues, but we kind of created our own member dues amongst ourselves, you know, taking that risk to say that you have a bunch of these individuals that haven't been empowered in a way that they don't know that they have that own empowerment, but they just need a push. They just need a little bit of help. And it's not a generational gap, which we do have those in certain areas. But I think it's more of just a continuation of the movement growing and shifting and changing as the world also shifts and change.
I wanted to ask each of you a question that looks to the future. You know, this podcast is largely about the idea that the decade we're entering into right now, the 2020s, is going to be decisive for American life really across this century. So knowing how many lines of effort you have underway, how many elements of the agenda and the movement are perhaps about to have a breakthrough, if you're looking back from the perspective of 2030, what would you want to say we got done in the 2020s? And what's the work you think would still be waiting for us next?
I want all the 64 million workers who are living and working in poverty in this country that are overwhelmingly Black and brown, women and men, to have a decent job that they can raise a family on and expect their kids are going to do better than they've done, that we're going to end working poverty in America and allow for a minimum wage that people can actually thrive on, and the right to form a union so we can create the most multiracial, inclusive middle class this nation's ever seen.
You know, the idea that we could deliver that, not just in our lifetime, but across this decade, is so powerful, because it really is true. It could happen if we get this right. Representative Aldridge, same question to you, but I'll ask it in a slightly different way. Imagine a new, freshly minted young legislator shows up in the state capitol in Missouri in his early 20s, and you're on the cusp of retirement from whatever great things you go on to do. And you're showing this young whippersnapper around and telling them what they can expect in the future based on what you were able to see delivered in your time. What would you want to be able to say to them? We did this.
Well, I would say to them, one, always believe in themselves. Hope and change is possible. There's going to be so many roadblocks that's ahead of us, and we've made a lot of change in the process. Hopefully I'll be able to look back and say, you know, we have a place where people can love whoever they want to love. Individuals can walk down the street and not be harassed due to the color of their skin. You know, workers will finally be able to work one job 40 hours a week and put away for their future. Everyone will be able to have the type of healthcare that they want in their life. Those are the issues that I hope I'll be able to tell that young legislator. But I also want to let him know to not ever give up on hope and not to ever quit believing that change is not possible. I know it gets tough, especially when we're juggling so many things in the world that we do or in our lives, but not to give up, because when we do come together and when we do organize collectively and when we fight, we got to not act like we don't have to fight. We definitely have to fight. but that the victory will be at the end of the tunnel, and that they or that young legislator can make any change possible that they want to see, if it's with themselves or collectively with others, that to remember to have their hope and faith and always keep your head up and push forward.
It has not been an easy road for organized labor, and people like Mary Kay and Representative Rasheen Aldridge have had to fight and remain resilient. But that resilience has been paying off. I'm so grateful that Mary Kay Henry of SEIU, Representative Rasheen Aldridge from Missouri, and their organizations and followers have kept the faith. We have such tremendous potential over the next decade and beyond, but only with their kind of leadership. And to any of you on the front lines who aren't being paid or treated with equity or fairness, who aren't receiving the benefits that you deserve, thank you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for keeping the faith. We will be fighting with you. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news, with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts, as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Got menopause? We've got you. Hi, Jackie here, founder of Exo Jackie. Feel supported throughout your menopause journey and beyond with our organic protein powders and symptom relief boosts. Formulated to keep bones and muscles strong, Exo Jackie products help reduce bloating, hot flashes, and weight gain. Enjoy 20% off with promo code EXOPODCAST. Shop now at exojacqui.com. Made for women by women.